Alright, we are continuing in chapter 13, Perek Yud-Gimel, of Shoftim. And we kind of left off with a couple of questions last time. That was already a couple of weeks ago now, so we'll do a review just to get back into it. So in this parak we discussed the Malach comes to the wife of Manoach and tells her, you're going to have a son, he's going to be a Nazir, you as well should observe the laws of Nazirus. And she goes and she tells her husband about this, and then he wants to meet this this person. They don't really know if it's a Navi or if it's a Malach, it's not clear to them. He wants to meet him, and he davens, and he gets her answer. The Malach comes back again, the wife of Manoach again, and this time, she gets Manoach, and he wants to give the Malach food, and the Malach says, no, thank you. And the Malach tells him, bring a carbon to Hashem. And I think maybe we'll pick up from maybe we'll go from Pasuk Tetzvah, verse 15. Vayomer Manoach al Malach Hashem, and Manoach said to the Malach, Natra no, so let's hold you up here, v'nasa lefanecha gidi'izim, and we'll make a goat for you to eat. Vayomer Malach Hashem al Manoach, and the Malach said to Manoach, Im tatreini ro'ocha bo'achmecha, if you hold me up, I'm not going to eat from your food. Im tasa olo v'hashem talenach, if you want to bring a carbon, you should bring it to Hashem, not to me. Ki lo yada Manoach ki malach Hashem hu, because Manoach didn't know that it was a Malach, that's why he offered him food, apparently. Vayomer Manoach o malach Hashem mi shemecha. And Manoach said to the Malach, what is your name? Tiyavo divarcha v'chibanucha, that when your words come true, we will be able to honor you. Again, he thought he was a Navi. He was assuming he was a Navi and a prophet. And when right now we don't know if your prophecy will come true. We don't know if you're for real. But when it comes true, or if it does, then we'll be able to honor you. He mentioned Reb Chaim Kanievsky, he suggests that he wanted to honor him as the Sandik at the Bris, that if he would have a son, as this Navi predicted, then he'll honor him by giving him the honor to hold the baby at the Bris. Vayomer lo Malach Hashem, and the Malach of Hashem said to him, Ulamo zeti shalishmi, v'hu feli. Why are you asking my name? And it is Feli. We gave a number of different interpretations of that. What does he mean? What does the who Feli? It's Feli. Either it means it's hidden, it's unknown, it's beyond you, or he was actually describing the purpose of his shlichus, of what his... He was a Malach. Malach is a messenger. He's here for a mission. And Feli was a description of his mission, either in that he was going to talk about Nazirus, which is described in the Torah as Kiyasli, when somebody would do something, a wondrous thing to become a Nazir. Yasli from the same root as Feli. Or he said, my mission is Feli because of what we're going to see. He's about to perform a miraculous act, which is going to be described as mafli laso, a wondrous act.
Nobody said so that he was asking, that's my name.
Well, it may have been his name, meaning he's just describing it, and the name of the Malach describes his mission. So in this, right, he's either saying it's hidden, or he's saying, this is my name. Basically, I am, meaning a Malach's entire purpose is his mission. So this is what defines my mission. Vayikach Manoach es gedi ha'izim v'esamincha, and Manoach took the goat v'esamincha as well as the carbon mincha. Vayal al atur v'Hashem, and he brought it on a rock to Hashem. U'masvini v'asot, and there was a wondrous act. U'manoach v'ishto roim, and Manoach and his wife saw. Vayihi va'alos halav me'al mesech ha'shamayma, and it was when the flame went up from on the mesech to the heaven. Vayal malach Hashem b'lav ha'mesech, and the malach of Hashem as well went up in the flame of the mesech. U'manoach v'ishto roim, and Manoach and his wife saw. Vayiplu al pneihem arza, and they fell on their faces to the ground.
Assuming that they lit the fire, that the fire did come down from Shemayim by itself?
So, good question. Good. So the Mefarshim say, actually on the previous pasuk, that what was the Masli Vasos, what was the wondrous act? That was that a fire came forth from the stone. So it didn't come down from heaven, that's not how they say it. They say it came forth from a stone, but nonetheless, it did come forth.
They didn't like it. Could that have been?
So...
That the implication became forth from the stone, that they did not light it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, again, they didn't light it. It was miraculous. The Malach produced it. So, fine. We're going to come back to these psukim, and I'm just going to read through them in general just to see the whole picture, and then we'll come back and examine some of the details. Chaf Aleph, v'lo yasaf od malach Hashem leheiro shal manoach v'alisha. And the Malach did not continue to appear before Manoach and his wife. Oz yada Manoach ki malach Hashem hu. Then Manoach knew that he was a Malach. Vayomer Manoach al ishto, and Manoach said to his wife, Most namus, we will surely die, ki Elokim ra'inu, because we have seen a messenger of God, one of the forces that of God that God put into the world, we've seen a Malach. Okay, so let's pause for a moment. The question was raised last time about the use of the term Masli Va'asot, which we find also in the Brach of Asher Yatzar, which we say after we go to the bathroom. So I'm going to put that question on hold. I want to save that for the end. We're actually going to hopefully tie it into Yom Kippur. So we're going to come back to that question. In the meanwhile, I want to share with you a piece from Rabbi Avram Gorwitz in the Sefer Or Avram. Avram Gorwitz is going on the pasuk. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. In pasuk Chaf Aleph, it says, "In the Malach didn't return to Manoach." Oz yada Manoach ki Malach Hashem hu. That's when Manoach knew that it was a Malach. So, what was it that made Manoach know that
he... That's the fact he went up in the flame there.
Right? Oh, very good, right? So, what was it that made Manoach know that this was a Malach? So, if you look at the Radak, basically, you know, says like you want to say, that it's going back on when the Malach goes up in a flame. That's really what Oz Yada Manoach is going on. That's when he knew that it was a Malach. Other Mepharshim say that it was when it didn't come back, meaning how do we, if you want to read the Pasuk Kipshuto in its simple reading, says, and he didn't come back, that's when he knew. So the Mepharshim there say, we mentioned this last time, that, you know, somebody can make him, you know, something look, you know, smoke and mirrors, like, he could look like he disappeared, right? But, you know, if you stick around long enough, the magician's going to come back, right? But he didn't come back. And the fact that he didn't come back, he knew that it was a Malach. Rav Avram Gorwitz has a more musher approach, using the Pshuto Shel Mikra, the the simple reading of the pasuk. He says, first thing we have to ask is the Gemara in Chagiga has a drasha. Pasuk says, Yisifte koing yishmeru das, v'toro yivakshu mipiu. The lips of a Kohen, Kohen's traditionally the teacher, guard knowledge, the Torah yivakshu mipiu, and they'll speak Torah from his mouth, because he is a malach of Hashem. So, the Gemara says, what is this pasuk telling you? A Kohen's a malach, a teacher's a malach? Says the Gemara, you know what this pasuk is teaching you? If the Rebbe is domel the malach Hashem tzivako, if he acts like a malach, then yivakshu Torah mitzviyu. Then you should ask, you should seek Torah from his mouth. Vimlav, but if he's not like a malach, al yivakshu Torah mitzviyu, do not seek Torah from his mouth. And the question is, what is a malach? And how do you know if your Rebbe is like a malach or not?
Yeah, you could actually think of ways you would not want a Rebbe to be a malach.
Right, that's true.
Like,
so you
only
start
ever
there.
Only ever seeing things or doing things one way, you know what I mean, for every different person.
Right, you know? So what is a malach? So Rabbi Avraham Gurwitz suggests...
Can't be completely like that. I mean, you know, so even if you say the Rebbe is not into kashrus, he's not into eating, something, but he still has to eat. The malach doesn't eat altogether.
Right. So he wants to suggest, based on our chapter here, a definition, a description that perhaps what the Gemara is leaning towards. He says... It seems, right, as we pointed out, in the Pshuto Shel Mikra, in the simple reading of the Pasuk, that Manoach wasn't, you know, he wasn't ready to assume that it was a Malach just because he disappeared in a fire, you know, in the fire of the Mizbeah. So why not? So he suggests, based on something Rabbeinu Nissim Gaon writes in Brachos, relating to the famous Gemara about the Tanur Shel Achanai, the big machlokas, the big dispute between Rabbi Eliezer and the other Chachamim about the certain oven and the laws of Tumah and Tara as relates to it, of purity and impurity. And the Gemara describes many miracles that Rabbi Eliezer brought on to try to prove that he was correct. And finally, a baskel came out and it said, Malachem Eitzel Rabbi Eliezer Shalacha Kamoso. A heavenly voice came forward and said, what are you guys arguing against Rabbi Eliezer? The halacha is like him. And they still didn't accept it. And they said, Lo Basramayim. The Torah says, the Torah is no longer in heaven, it's given to us. And we decide based on the majority rule. And even if a heavenly voice comes and says, halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer, if we understand the laws of the Torah, interpret them differently, that's the halacha. And that's how we pass it. So why didn't they accept the baskel? Why didn't they listen?
Okay, all right. So that's a
what was the point of the baskel? Okay, but what was the point of the baskel? So why would Hashem send that heavenly voice?
It doesn't matter. But because the devil.
But you're not answering the question. You're just saying, you're right. You're saying the conclusion. You're right. It doesn't matter. We don't listen to it. But why would Hashem send the baskel?
To make this point.
At which point?
Point that it's not in Tabaya, that it's on earth.
Okay, so Rabbi Onisim Gom says, in one of his answers, that it was sent there to test the Chachamim, to test them if they would put aside the tradition that they have of Lo Bashamayimi, the Torah is not in heaven, and you're not supposed to listen to Baskel, or not. And they understood that this could be just this could be a test, and they understood it's a test, and they overcame that. So he wants to say that that's also perhaps why Manoah didn't react to the Mofet, this great sign. Not Loba Shamayim he necessarily, because that, I mean, we did bring in Loba Shamayim he last time a little bit, but
he went up.
But right, but just in that, you know, just because something miraculous occurs doesn't mean that, you know, that this is for sure a malach. Just because that this is what, you know, this is a definitely Hashem's will. It could be a test. It could be a test whether you're supposed to accept this. Just because something miraculous occurs.
There's no one thing based on.
What?
There's no instance of people calling up to Shemaya that were besides protest.
Right, he just wants to say that just because something miraculous happens, you don't go running to, like, you know, to base your life based on that. I think that's his point.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, a test.
Well, like a certain person who took the shame out of the forest,
Yeah, so he wasn't convinced based on that it was a malach. So what was it that convinced him? So what convinced him was that the malach didn't come back. How did that convince him? He says because a person, after he does something like that, he's going to come back for a little bit of cover, a little bit of honor. You don't do something amazing and then just, you know, leave the people without coming to bask in the glory and to enjoy the honor. A little hana, a little benefit, a little cover. That's what a person would do, right? I don't know if it relates to it, but they say, right, a criminal always returns to the scene of the crime, right? He wants to see, like, you know, how he pulled it off and what the reaction is, and right? So, I have deal, but...
Right, if a person was on a high enough level to be able to do that, it's honor, so he doesn't
right,
want
so I guess,
to cover.
Right, I don't, I guess, maybe his he wasn't, his consideration wasn't that this was a person on a great level. It was either this is a, is either a malach or it's a trickster, you know?
Right.
So,
well, he thought that maybe it was a trickster, but I mean, why would he think that after everything that occurred?
What occurred? Just a miraculous thing.
Yeah.
A little magic.
Yeah, I mean,
a little smoke
and
mirrors. What? Right. Right. I mean, the Medrash says you conceive. I don't know if they knew that yet. So, and there's my focus there. So, so he says, but here where he didn't return, so then Manoah knew that this was a malach. Because a malach's entire, as I mentioned before, his entire existence is his mission. And that's what a malach means. A malach is a messenger. He's on a mission. And since that's his entire being, so there's nothing, he doesn't have any hana, he doesn't have any enjoyment from it. It's not, he's there to fulfill a mission, and he does it. So that's how he knew that this was a malach. And he says that's also what a Rebbe has to be like. That if when the Gemara says that if your Rebbe is like a malach, so then you should go and learn from him. If not, then you should not. That the Rebbe has to see his mission here is to teach Torah, and that has to be his complete mission, not for kavod, not for money, not for anything else. And if you can,
be an item?
What?
That's the basic requirement. That he's an item.
I mean, I think that is a basic requirement, and but he's not focusing on that particular nakuda. I think it's related. But the point is that he has to see his mission as he's here for one purpose, which is to teach Torah. And that has to define him, at least in his role as the Rebbe. There must be no personal desire here for honor or gain. That's the kind of Rebbe that a person should seek. That's what the Gemara is saying, that he has to be Dome Lamalach, he has to be like a mouse. Okay. So, Manoah reacts to this, and he says, Most Namos, we're surely going to die. And we mentioned the Malbim last time, that because once he realized that he saw a Malach, he thought that you can't see a Malach is spiritual unless you're on the brink of death, where your Nishama is leaving you. You must, when you're leaving your physical being, only then could you see a Malach. And no, apparently he was wrong. But that's what brings us to Chaf Gimel, where Pasuk verse 23. Now he's going. His wife responds. Batomer lo ishto, and his wife sent him. You're wrong. We're not going to die. Ruchafet Hashem laham yisdeinu. Had Hashem wanted to kill us, lo lakach miyadeinu ola mincha. He wouldn't have taken from our hands an ola and a mincha. He wouldn't have accepted our carbon. Deloher anu eskalele. And he wouldn't have shown us all this. V'cha'eslo ishniyanu kazos. And he wouldn't have told us this up till now. So she seems to be referencing three things. So Reb Chaim Kanievsky explains, first of all, why did Manoach think that they were going to die? He suggests differently than the Malbim. He suggests, why else would Hashem send a Malach instead of just a Navi? To send a Navi, why send a Malach? It must be that Hashem wants us dead.
Well, because the whole purpose was to tell us they were going to have a child, and if you're not alive, how are they going to have a child? So that was the whole purpose.
Well, okay, so let's see what the response is. Let's see if any of her response ties into that. So she gave him three answers. First, she said, first of all, he wouldn't have accepted our carbon if he wanted us to die. And second of all, he wouldn't have shown us all of this. Meaning what? All that the Malach did, meaning all that they needed was the message, if anything. They didn't need to see the miraculous disappearance of the Malach. That was unnecessary. He wouldn't have shown us all this had he wanted us to die. And thirdly, the Ka'if Lois Miyanu Kazot, that he wouldn't have told us all this, meaning they wouldn't have told us what is going to happen to our child. They wouldn't have told us that he's going to be a Nazir and he's going to save Israel.
All they not going to be a child.
No, because maybe he's only going to die at the end, of the pregnancy, in childbirth. Maybe he'll die now and she'll live out until necessary. But it would have been enough. All that they needed to know was that she or both of them shouldn't drink wine and shouldn't become tamei. That would have sufficed in order, that's all they needed to know if they were going to die. And then after he was born, whoever took care of him would need to know what to do with him.
After this happened, after Malach went up in the car, right?
Immediately after, I'm assuming. Okay, so that's her reaction. Now, yeah, you're right. It's hard to understand exactly why he thought they were going to die, if they hadn't yet. Right. So in the Malbim, it's a little bit easier to understand. He's saying we must be almost dead because we saw Malach. We must be, leaving. Yeah.
Not every and generally not heavenly death penalty is right away.
Right. Right. But here, though, he thought he was going to die as a result of this of seeing Mala. So
he's going to die when
Okay, Pasuk Chaf Daled, Vateled Ha'isha Bein, and the woman gave birth to a son, Vatikra Eshemo Shimshon, and she called his name Shimshon, Vayigdal Hanar, and the lad grew up, Vayivarcheu Hashem, and Hashem blessed him. And the Spirit of Hashem began to greet him at times, to visit him in Machane Dan, in the camp of Dan, Bein Sarah Ubein Eshtaol, between Sarah and Eshtaol. So, just on a pshat level, the pasuk describes, the famo means like a pamon, is a bell, like occasional. The Spirit of Hashem came over him occasionally. And here we don't mean a spirit of Ruach HaKodesh, of divine inspiration in the mind, but rather a spirit of strength. We know, right, famously, Shimshon was very strong, and we're going to see that in the next chapter, but that's the Ruach Hashem being described. Hashem is still with him on occasion, a tremendous strength. Others understand that it was right that with the strength, what occasionally came over him was the inspiration to do battle with the Plishtim, and at times not. That's what the Rabbag says. Let me see how he says it. Right. Sometimes you overcome with the strength and then feel like it's time to fight the Plishtim now. And then it would wane, and then it would come back. And it was always waiting, you know, when is it time to fight the Plishtim?
These stories about, you know, a grandmother picks up the car of the grandchild.
That
lift up a grocery
right, so that's adrenaline. That's a different move. This is a more...
It's a form of adrenaline.
Okay.
Simon Smoove has
a famous smooth about that with Yaakov Avinu, how he lifted the rock off the well. He talks about, you know, what you're referring to, lifting up cars. I think Shimshon is a little bit different, because it was more common.
More regular basis.
Right, exactly. So, let's just look at some of these psukim a little bit more in depth. So, first of all, share with you an interesting Ariza. About Shimshon's Gilgal. Shimshon, the Arizal says, was a Gilgal of Nadav, the son of Aaron HaKohen. Nadav and Abihu, the two sons of Aaron, who brought Ketores into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and died. So he says, first of all, in Sefer Shmuel, the pasuk refers to I think someone there is recounting, I think Shmuel is recounting the different Nevi'im and different people that Hashem sent on behalf of Klal Yisrael over the years. And it refers to Vayishlach Hashem as Yerubal, the Es Bidon, and he sent Yerubal, and he sent Bidon. And it says that Bidon, the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, refers to Shimshon. The Rizal says, it fits very nicely, right? The Gemara says, why is he called Bidon? Because he comes from Dun. He comes from Shevet Dun. The Rizal says, additionally, Bidon, Beis Dalanung, is the same letters as Nadav. So that fits together very nicely. Furthermore, one of the Gemara gives many reasons why Nadav and Abihu, where they went wrong, why they were killed, besides the bringing to Taurus. And one of them is that they didn't marry. That they used to say, the Medrash says, what woman is good enough for me? So therefore, Shimshon, we're going to see, when he spends time in prison, he's going to be involved with many women. And that's going to be like a sort of a punishment for that. He married, and he was involved with many women also. So, and that's a punishment. It's not. I don't think it's a tikkun. And another similarity, or
not a deacon would be if he,
right, I don't think it's a deacon, right,
married Yisrael,
exactly. I don't think he was misakin. I think he but I think he, it was a punishment that, I don't know about marrying, we'll see who he married, that is going to be a different question.
Maybe it would have been a
whether
deacon
she was Jewish
had he
or not.
Resisted the situation.
Right.
We'll
have to see what, you know, if he married, if she was Jewish or not. That's going
to
be a question. But
came back again afterwards.
I don't know. That one more, yeah, I didn't have a chance to look there. I have to look there. So one more connection is that the children of the B'nai Aaron, not of Aviyu, they were drunk. They went in under the influence of wine into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And therefore, as a tikkun, Shimshon, who was a Gilgal of Nadav, was a Nazir from
the tikkun, of course.
Yeah, okay, so you have both. So he did not drink wine his entire life. A couple more ideas. So, on this last pasuk, Batocha Ruach Hashem Lefamu L'macha Nedon, and the Ruach of Hashem began to greet him occasionally in the camp of Dan. So the Gemara says in Sota, by the way, has a blot or two of Gemara straight, all about Shimshon. And it says there that what's about Tachel, and it began Batochel Ruach Hashem. So the Gemara says it means that Chala Nevuah of Yaakov Avinu. The Nevuah of Yaakov came true. Yaakov Avinu gave each of his children a bracha before he died, and there was Nevuah in them. There was prophecy in them. And for Dan, he said, Yehi Dan Ale Nachash Ale Derech. Dan will be a serpent along the way. And this is a culmination, this is a realization of that prophecy. He was referring to Shimshon. We're probably going to come back to this Nevuah and discuss it further, the different sukkah in there. But the Marsha there explains that the simple understanding of Ruach Hashem means Ruach HaKodesh, right? Not just a strength, the spirit of a strength, but Nevuah, a prophecy. And we know that Shimshon, though, did not experience prophecy. We're not going to see that he did. So how do we understand if it refers to Ruach Hashem? So the Gemara says, how is it Ruach HaKodesh? It's referring to Yaakov Avinu's Nevuah. That this was a realization of Yaakov's Nevuah. And it refers to Shimshon as a Nachash. The Medrash makes a number of comparisons. This is over there in Parshas Vayechi. The Medrash compares Shimshon to a snake in a number of ways. It says, first of all, a Nachash, the original Nachash, the Nachash HaKadmoni, the first serpent in Gan Eden, was involved with Chava, we know. And so too, Shimshon was involved with women. Then it says, just like a snake can be charmed by a nevuah, an oath, or a spell, a snake charmer can charm a snake. So too, Shimshon, we're going to see, was imprisoned because he agreed to he made them take an oath that they won't harm him, and then they will imprison him. And a nachash, the Mishnah Medrash says, its strength is in its head. To kill it, you got to strike it on the head. So to Shimshon, his strength was on his head, in his hair, that he lost his strength because of his hair. And just like a snake continues to kill even after its death, its venom can still kill after the snake is dead. So too, we'll see at the end of Shimshon's life, he takes down many, many plishtim with him after his death. We'll see Chazal say he killed more people in his death than he had in his entire life. So we'll see that when we get there. So Shimshon, though, is referred to a nachash. Batocha Ruach Hashem Lefamu L'machane Dam. This pasuk, according to the Gemara, does not mean, or doesn't only mean, as simple as it does on a simple level, that he began to have strength, but it also means now was the beginning of the fulfillment of the prophecy of Yaakov Avinu. Okay. So that's the end of the parak, and we just left off with one important question, which is, Mafli Lasa. That the pasuk describes the act that the malach performed over, you know, the act of making the fire, or the pasuk describes that what the malach did was a mafli lasos, was a wondrous act. And the question was posed that isn't that the same wording that we use at the end of the brach of Asher Yatzar after we go to the bathroom? So what does one have to do with the other? Especially, what makes the question even more blatant or strong is that our pasuk here in chapter 13 of Shoftim is the only place in Tanakh where these words appear. So the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, when they're composing the bracha of Asher Yatzar, are drawing right from our perek, taking these words and sticking them into the bracha of Asher Yatzar. And what does one have to do with the other?
I said Bokra, I seem to remember reading somewhere that there were like two different versions of Asher Yatzar.
There are other changes in the Nusach. I don't know about this part. So the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, who has Sefer Aruch HaShulchan, which is basically, you know, another commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, extensive, speaks on all four sections of Shulchan Aruch. In the back of one of the Sfarim, they collected his drashos, his speeches that he wrote up. I assume he wrote that. And in one of his Shabbos Shuvah drashos, he dealt with this question. So, if we have time, we'll come back to relate it to Yom Kippur, is what he's trying, where he's tying it in. But we'll start with what's more relevant to our Navi. So, what does it mean in Asher Yatzar when we say Umasli Lasa? It's a wondrous thing that he made. So, the Rama in Shulchan Aruch actually tells us that which is miraculous, the reason why we're saying it now is because the Rama says, Shekosher davar ruchni begashmi. Now Hashem ties together something that is ruchnius with something that is gashmius, something spiritual with something physical. Meaning that the neshama is put into the guf. The neshama, which is spiritual, is put into the body. And not only that, but the neshama is also dependent on the bodily function. When a person dies, their neshama leaves them. If a person doesn't eat, they will die and their neshama will leave. If a person doesn't go to the bathroom, can't go to the bathroom, they will die and their neshama will leave them. So our neshama is dependent on our physical faculties. Why? How does that work? So Magen Avraham there explains that the neshama actually benefits from the ruchnius that's within food. What does that mean? What ruchnius is within food? So we've touched on this in our Nefesh HaChaim shir, but the pasuk says in Tehillim, "Le'olam Hashem Shvarcha Nitzav Bashamayim." Hashem, your word is le'olam, is forever standing in heaven. What does that mean? So the Mefarshim explains, Hashem's word is forever in heaven means that when Hashem created the world, it's not like when we create something, we create a building. You know, you make it, and then you leave, and it's still there. And you can come back, you don't have to be there, and it will still be there. But the world isn't like that. The world is here because Hashem is constantly saying, Yihu Amar Vayehi, right? Because he said, and it was, and it is, and it continues to be. Hu Tziva Vayamod, right? The pasuk says, Hu Amar Vayehi, he said, and it was. Hu Tziva Vayamod, he commands, and it stands. Meaning he consistently gives it existence. And that's true of everything in existence. And so every morsel of food, its existence has Hashem saying, exists, Hashem breathing life into it. And that's the ruchnius that our neshama can tap into when we eat. It can tap into that dvar Hashem, Dibur HaElokei, that within every existence. Okay. So that's why what we mean in Asher Yatzar, when we say that it's a mafli v'asos, like Hashem ties the neshama to the guf, that Hashem makes our neshama dependent on physical things and really ties them together. Now, what does it mean over here? What does that have to do with what we're saying over here? Furthermore, I think you asked this question last time also, that by Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov also meets a Malo. And, right, he goes back across for Pachim Ketanim, he goes back to for some jugs he forgot, and he meets the Malach of Esav, and he has a fight with him, and he asks him the same question, Mashemecha, what's your name? And the Malach says, Ramazet Yishal Lishmi. The same thing the Malach says here, why are you asking my name? But that's it, doesn't say anything more. But here he says, the who Feli. Here he gives a little more, and it's Feli. Why over here does he answer, the who Feli? So says with Epstein that just as a person who is Gashmius, it's a Pele, it's wondrous that we can have something Ruchnius tied onto us, implanted within us. So the same thing, the opposite, a Mala, which is completely Ruchnius, right? And this comes back to our discussion, Rambam, Ramban, Malbim, whether the Mala can take on a physical form or not. A Mala, which is completely Ruchni, for it to come down to earth and put on physical garments, you know, take on a physical form, that is also a pelelasso, so taking something ruchni and making it gashmi, making it physical. Yeah, and even furthermore, that davar ruchni can now talk to someone like Manoah, who the Gemara describes as an Am Haaretz. He was ignorant, he wasn't on a great spiritual level. That's belly, that's a pele, that's a, you know, that's wondrous. That's why he says, that's why he responds to Manoah, the who Feli. Lama Zetishali Shmi, that which you're even asking me my name is a pele, that you, a physical, you know, not even a, you're physical and you haven't even made yourself into a you know, a spiritual human being. You're still, you're ignorant, you're lowly, and yet I can speak to you. That's Tali. So Mafli Vaso's person that he can wear a physical body, and the Hu Feli is even more Pala than he can talk to Manoah. But the Yaakov Avinu Amalos doesn't need to say that, because Yaakov Avinu was almost like a Malach himself. The fact that he could talk to him, Ramazet Yishalish me, why are you asking me my name? No, he says whatever the pshat there is. But he doesn't say Behu Feli. It's a, that which you can ask me that is a Pella, because by Yaakov, you know, it wasn't such a Pella, it wasn't so wondrous that these two people, these two beings can interact. But by Manoach, it was. And so that's the, there's one more point which he mentions later, which is that another part of the Mafli Lassos was when they saw it, meaning at the end, they see the Malach, you know, go up in a flame. They basically witness him ungarbed from his physical cover. And that was part of the Mafli Lassos as well, that was wondrous to see the physical and the spiritual divide once again. And that's the connection, what these words mean, Mafli Lassos, is the Gashmi and the Ruchni coming together. There's nothing more, you know, in one way the Malach is the ultimate example of that, of having a spiritual Malach put on a physical garb. And when a person goes to the bathroom, a person who has a neshama within him, and yet that neshama is being, you know, that's as physical as it gets. That's our most physical act that we do, and those can still come together. That's a, and that part of sustaining the neshama, even, that's, you know, that's a mafli lassos. On a deeper level, you know, we've spoken about this also in Nefesh HaChayim here. He talks about Ruach Haim, when a person goes to the bathroom, they are releasing all the tumah that is within that which we ingest. So there's, in a way, that's a deeper level of how it sustains the neshama, is it actually unloads the tumah, the impurities, the spiritual impurities within us. That's why you can't daven. You can't learn in a bathroom. It's impure. Okay. So I want to speak about Yom Kippur, but we're really out of time. So this happened at the end of I don't mind something, but I don't
come up.
I don't want to
give a 1 minute summary.
Okay, I'll give the 1 minute summary. It's just a very nice idea of how he relates to Yom Kippur. The Medrash says that the pasuk says in Acharemo to describe seemingly the avoda of Yom Kippur that the Kohen Gadol would do, the service in the Beis HaMikdash, it says, "Bezos Yavo Aaron." This is how Aaron has to come. If he wants to come into Kodesh HaKadoshim, this is how he has to come, with certain karbanos, etc. The Medrash says that, how does the Kohen Gadol come in? What's Bezos? Bezos refers to many mitzvahs. Zechus HaTorah, the merit of Torah, because it says Bezos HaTorah. Zechus Mila, because it says about Mila, Zos Frisi. Zechus Shabbos, with the merit of Shabbos, because it says Ashrei Enos Yaseh Zos. And it refers to Shabbos as Zos. So, first the Torah, Mila, and Shabbos as Zos. And so, Bezos means with the merits of these mitzvahs, the Kohen Gadol comes in. So the Aruch HaShulchan explains that there were three levels of going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Moshe Rabbeinu could go in whenever he wanted. Aaron HaKohen, the Pasuk is telling us, could also go in whenever he wanted with the service that we normally, leave off for Yom Kippur. But as long as he brought those karbanos, Aaron also could go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But every other Kohen Gadol after Aaron could only go on one day of the year.
Oh, so Aaron could just, as long as he was performing that particular service, it didn't matter
what
day.
That's what he said. So the question is, what is it, why is it that the Kohen Gadol, so we understand, so the Kohen Gadol, he's only allowed to go in once a year. So why is he allowed to go on Yom Kippur? What does he have that allows him going on Yom Kippur? So, interestingly, the Medrash, the Yerushalmi, says, the Pasuk says that at the time of the Avoda, no man is allowed in the Ohel Moed, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, at the time that the Kohen Gadol is doing the service in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Nobody else is allowed in. Even into the Kodesh, in the whole Ohel Moed, in the whole Mishkan. So the Gemara says, Yerushalmi says, even Malachim can't be in. Because it says, any man can't be there. It says, even though about whom it says, their faces are like the faces of men, referring to Malachim. Even Malachim weren't allowed in during the Kohen Gadol's Avoda.
What about that story about the second base of Migdash, where there was that...
Can we save it for after?
Okay.
Yeah. So the Medrash adds on to that. How could then the Kohen Gadol himself? It says no man. So how could the Kohen Gadol himself go in? So the Medrash says that at that time he had Ruach HaKodesh on him, his face would be burning, and it quotes the pasuk we mentioned earlier, Kisifse Kohen Yishmeru Das Ki Malach Hashem Tzivakosu. That at that moment, the Kohen Gadol, he's like a malach, the Medrash says. So that's the question, right? The Yerushalmi says that even a malachim can't go in. The Medrash says that how could the Kohen Gadol go in? Because he's like a malach. So how can we understand that? Either it's an argument, right? That either the Medrash holds that even a malachim could go in, or maybe the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is even greater than a malach. So says Rav Epstein, he wants to suggest, says the Aruch HaShulchan, that based on our idea that of the mixture of gashmius and ruchnius, according to Adol on Yom Kippur, is even greater than a malach. A malach is ruchnius, right? So when this malach in our story, you know, ripped off his physical clothes and went back up, it was a mafli lasos. It was unbelievable. But he's the etzem ruchnius. That's what he is. So the fact that he can make himself kula ruchni isn't, you know, it's good, but you know, it's not so amazing. But for someone who's gashmi, for a Kohen Gadol, who's the etzem, he's really, in his essence, he's physical. For him to make himself completely spiritual like a malach, that's even an even greater level than a malach. And the question is then, so that's why only a Kohen Gadol was allowed in on Yom Kippur, because he was even greater than a malach, because he was someone physical who made himself like a malach. Why on Yom Kippur? What does he have on Yom Kippur that he's able to do this? So the zot, he has these mitzvot that we have, that of Shabbos, those are just examples. So all the mitzvot of Klal Yisrael, he brings in with him. Because the leader of Klal Yisrael is affected by the rest of Klal Yisrael. Right? When, after the Egel, Hashem says, Lech Reid, Moshe, go down. But you're going down in spirituality also, because the people have gone down, so your spiritual level has gone down. The same way, he says, when the people's level is raised up, then the leader is raised up as well. And so on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol, he says, Titaru. Even though he's told us already, you know, we've been warned before Yom Kippur, do tshuva, etc., we've raised ourselves up, but even on Yom Kippur still, when they're ready to do the avodah, the Kohen Gadol says, Titaru, purify yourself. Because I need this. Because in order for me to go in, I need the people to be on the highest spiritual level. Then I have the zechus, the merit, to go in, to be like a malach, and to be there on Yom Kippur. Unfortunately, now we don't have the avodah on Yom Kippur. Bemir Tashem, we can still raise ourselves up, you know, on Yom Kippur,
like
close to malachim, and that could be a great merit for all of us.